Time for the Bay Area's favorite radio quiz show. This night, Dana Rodriguez is joined by panelists, technical editor Kira Pace, and teacher Lori Fisher, and a studio audience of more than 100. Welcome to the 25th anniversary edition of Minds Over Matter.
If you ain't wrong, you're right. If it ain't day, it's night. If you ain't sure, you might. It's gotta be this or that.
You gotta be your moderator.
If it ain't dry,
you gotta be your moderator, Dana Rodriguez.
You ain't got. Couldn't we have done it without a mistake just once?
Not likely.
All right. The natives are restless tonight. Welcome to Minds Over Matter. Hope you're having a wonderful weekend. We also hope you can spend an hour with us because Minds Over Matter is an audience participation quiz program. So, of course, we're encouraging your participation in any way possible. This is our 25th anniversary party, and we have a lot of people sitting in the studio here and in the various studios looking at us through the glass. And we also hope you can call and participate if you are at home. And those two numbers are area code 415-841-4134. Again, so after 25 years, I still read the number off a piece of paper. Area code 415-841-4134. Or toll-free, yes, we do have a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. And we'll be taking your questions on current events, movies, history, literature, geography, television, radio, and just about everything else. I want to remind you of our email address, which is mindsovermatter1, MINDSOVERMATTER1. That is the numeral one, not the number one, at gmail.com. Feel free to email us anytime. We don't read them on the air because it's too complicated for me. And but Minds Over Matter 1, if you want to get in touch with us for some reason. Also, if you'd like to hear us online, you can certainly do that anywhere in the world, and I have done that, at kalw.org. That is kalw.org. And if you'd like to listen to the podcast of this show, it should be on at some point in the next 48 hours at kalw.org and iTunes, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, we're going to dispense with introductions tonight, because I didn't have a chance to write one. And
Dana Rodriguez.
Yeah. And so what we're going to do is we're going to go through a round of questions, just the three of us. And then we are going to invite our guests who have a question in mind to read it on the air. And we will try to answer it. And then if we can't, we will leave it open to our listening audience. Okay. Mm-hmm. First of all, I want to say thank you to all our guests, over 100, well over 100, and we appreciate them coming to the studio, and we love seeing them, we love meeting them, and it's a great pleasure to have you here, so welcome. All right, so we're going to start with a question, and Carrie, you're going to go first.
All right, start with a quick question. Who is the first female photographer to have a photo on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine?
Not Annie Leibovitz?
No, not Annie Leibovitz. You might not know her as a photographer, but...
So this is a celebrity photographer?
Yes.
Is she a rock and roll person?
She is a rock and roll person.
Is it Patti Smith?
No.
Oh, that's a good guess.
It is a good guess, and it's about the right... It's a little earlier than that, really, but... I mean, she did have a career as a photographer, but I think most people know her for other reasons.
Was she married to somebody in rock and roll?
She was married to somebody in rock and roll, happily.
Paul McCartney's wife, Linda Eastman.
Linda Eastman, yeah, that is correct.
Big bell.
And, all right, if you have a short question, go
ahead.
I
do. Among the final works of what German expressionist painter are nine tarpaulins used by the German army in World War I to camouflage artillery, hiding them from our aerial observation?
Is this a somebody who's well-known in modern art circles?
He's well-known
from... Absurdist, cubist... You know, post...
Yeah,
post...
he did die in World War I, so that's why these nine tarps are his... among his final works. But German expressionist. Right. He's very famous as a German expressionist, very famous for his journal work, too, with the Blue Rider.
Oh.
Our studio audience seems to know.
Yeah.
For real.
Does the studio audience want to shout it out?
No. Is his first name Oscar?
No.
All right.
Durer?
Leave it out.
No.
Okay.
And Laura, you go ahead.
All right. In 1966, all my questions will be short tonight, Time magazine published its first cover that did not have an image of a person on it or any image at all. What was it?
Once more.
1966, Time magazine published its first cover that did not have an image of a person or of a animate thing.
Was it a solid color?
Yes, I think so.
1966.
Oh, so it wasn't a computer.
It was not.
Okay.
So it was not an image of any kind.
There might have been a vague image in the background, but it was not an image of a living thing. So a computer I would accept it. It isn't that, though. Hmm.
Is God dead?
Yes.
All right.
That was the cover that they had, Is God Dead. It was a black cover. And then I think there might have been an image lurking in the background.
All right.
Very nice.
If you have another short question.
I do. And it is... only two Supreme Court justices have ever appeared on currency. Who are they? Legal tender.
One is Salmon B. Chase,
yeah.
Who was the Chief Justice under Lincoln,
and you probably have,
and Andrew Johnson.
Yeah, and what bill was he on? Do you know which currency?
It's
Kira probably has one in her pocket.
It's
oh, so it must be like the 10,000.
It is the 10,000.
10,000? All right, good job.
Yeah, I do that. Why she can never lend me any money.
I know, that sweet.
Can you break a 10,000?
Yeah. Oh, is the other one Taft?
No.
So is this person? Was this person their highest office, Supreme Court justice?
Yes.
So they were never president, or
they were never president. Or anything bigger than Supreme Court.
John Marshall?
Yes, very right. Good. Well, he was on the 500.
Oh.
All right, very nice.
All right. This is a movie question. I'm really just including it because I like the quote so much. Cecilia Eger, who worked in the, I don't know if any of you ever heard of PM, the newspaper in New York. It doesn't exist anymore, but it was a tabloid. But she was a very clever film critic for PM. And this was her quote. It's like grand opera, only the people are thinner. So who was she talking about? So she was a movie critic. Keep that in mind. It's like grand opera, only the people are thinner. What movie star was she talking about?
A star.
Not a
certain movie.
She had just seen this. She was reviewing this movie.
It's like grand opera, the people are skinnier.
So what one person is going to be described as people?
She's talking about people, all the people in the,
okay.
the basic plot of the film. It's like grand opera, only the people are thinner.
And is the movie opera-esque in theme or music?
When I say, I use grand opera in terms of melodrama.
Okay.
Or like Valley of the Dolls melodrama?
Well.
Like bad, terrible?
A slightly higher version of that.
Valley of the Dolls 2.
That's Return to the Valley of the Dolls.
Anybody want to take a guess? I can leave it out.
Yeah.
All right.
And if anybody comes to the mic and knows, they should
tell us. Cecilia Eger, who was the film critic for PM, this is in the 1940s, reviewed this film and said, it's like grand opera, only the people are thinner. So what movie star's film was she talking about? All right. Second question. I just got back from Rome. And not to rub it in anybody's nose, but I just got back from Rome. So I found out a very interesting fact when visiting the Colosseum. What major clothing garment, and it says so on the sign outside as you're lined up in English, what major clothing garment, major piece of clothing, can you not wear to the Colosseum? What major piece of clothing can you not wear to the Roman Colosseum? And it's not shoes, it's clothing.
Is it a hat?
It's not a hat.
It's not a toga.
Or they wouldn't let me in.
Toga? Probably
not. It is
not,
no.
Okay.
It is not a costume. Not a. Not what you would call a costume.
So shorts? That doesn't seem possible.
Mm-mm. So what major piece of clothing, and it's a piece of clothing we're all familiar with, can you not wear to the Roman Colosseum?
And it's not an accessory like sunglasses?
It's not an accessory.
Okay.
When I say piece of clothing, it's a piece of clothing that covers you. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. So once more, what major piece of clothing can you not wear by decree to the Roman Colosseum to this day? And Cecilia Eger from the film critic from PM magazine or PM newspaper in the 1940s reviewed this film and said it's like Grand Opera, only the people are thinner. Whose film was she talking about? Okay. And we are going to invite up to our mic Bob, who was actually here already, so I didn't have to invite him. And Bob is going to read a question, and we are going to attempt to answer it. Bob, what do you got?
Okay, this is a geography question.
All right.
So city airports are identified by a letter code. For example, San Francisco's airport is identified by the code SFO. There is only one city in the U.S. whose name matches its airport code. Name that city.
When you say matches the airport code, since the airport code is only... Oh, so the city's name is only three letters long?
You might guess that, yes.
and it's big enough to have an airport. That's a good question.
Yeah, so the city's name is only three letters long. How many three-letter cities are there in the U.S.? It's... you wouldn't call it a major city, though, would you?
No, it's not a major city. One hint is that it's west of the Mississippi.
And it's not an abbreviation?
Not an abbreviation.
Yeah. West of the Mississippi. Three letters long.
Kara, you have a lot of unusual city names in your head.
I do, but none of them are three letters. I like the... Oh, not a major city. The shortest city name I can think of that might have an airport is four letters. So, and that's Reno. So I don't think it's that.
You're in the right state.
It's Nevada. Okay.
Not Elko. That's four letters.
It's not Winnemucca because that's way too long. And you're not talking about Las Vegas for
no.
LAS. Okay.
So, three letters.
Is there an Elk, Nevada? Nevada?
Oh.
That's
close.
Good.
Oh, yeah.
Close.
There is a
Elm.
No.
Elo.
What letter does it start with?
It starts with an E.
Oh.
Oh.
Oh. Everybody in the audience knows.
Unfortunately, you're behind glass at the moment.
Hold up a sign, people.
Come on, spell it out. Sign language. Let's go.
And if I remember...
That's an E, all right?
We know the E.
That's an L.
Wait a minute. What is David? What do you say?
Elv.
Oh, Eli?
Eli.
Ely, yes.
Ely.
Okay.
All right, good job.
They have an airport. Very nice, Bob.
Thank you.
Good work.
Thank you, studio audience.
Next contestant, Harry.
Harry's here. I've never been to the Ely Airport.
Yeah, hi. Yeah. We're having a great time. This is Susan and Harry from Berkeley. And our question is, what is 672, the international country code for?
Is this outside of North America?
I can't give you a hint. It'll give it away.
6? You mean calling code?
672.
You're hard.
Boy, Harry's
you're a
poker
hard man.
Player. I don't want to play poker with Harry.
it's not a familiar code to me, but then most countries' codes are not familiar to me.
Wait, is it in the Pacific Ocean somewhere?
You can tell her that. Can't you?
Well, yes.
Is it an island country?
I can't say that.
Well, I'm going to guess Micronesia because it's something like that.
No.
Oh. Okay.
That's right. You're just back from the...
Yeah, we are.
It's on your mind. Did you call?
It started with a 6, so...
Huh, oh, that's good. Well, right. It's got its little tiny ways. How about Tuvalu?
No.
The Marshall Islands, Republic of.
No.
So is it actually in the Pacific? Are we just guessing a whole bunch of, it's not, is it?
You got to break down a little bit, Harry.
He wants to keep the chair.
If I break it down, I think I'll give it away.
Okay.
Do you really?
That's okay.
All right, then Antarctica.
Yes.
Is it?
Oh, there you go.
Oh, very nice.
Thank you, Harry.
Good job. That's good.
All right, Kira, what have you got?
Hi. Okay. All right. The dress code of what Silicon Valley company, which has since been acquired by Oracle, was famously simple: you must.
Did you say dress code?
The dress code of what Silicon Valley company was simply, you must.
And it's now owned by Oracle.
Now owned by Oracle.
How long ago were they acquired?
2010. The paperwork started in 2009 or 2009 and then 2010 completed.
Huh. Any idea?
I don't know what kind of company.
The audience can guess,
yeah,
too, by the way.
Sure.
That Oracle buys up. Is it one of the very hip, you know?
No, I wouldn't call it hip, no.
Okay. Yahoo, then.
No.
Okay.
I'm looking in your
Sounds
direction.
Like John knows.
That is correct.
Oh, Sun. Okay.
What was it?
Sun Microsystems.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, good. There. Their All dress right. code was, you must. So, nicely done.
Good.
And let's go to a call.
A
I bet
call?
It's Ed.
A call?
Hi, you're on Minds Ever Matter.
Hi, this is Ed. I'm sorry I cannot join you today, but I promise, if I'm still alive, I'll be there next year. Okay? Promise you that.
We're not going to have a party next year.
You will. You will.
It's only every 5 years, Ed. All right.
Okay. Well, hopefully you will. Okay, so I have, if you have two containers of water, one is hot and one is cold, and you put them on ice, which one will freeze first, the hot one or the cold one?
The hot,
hot one.
One.
How do you know?
Because I saw Mr. Wizard when I was a child.
Very good. Okay, what is this effect? By the way, that was discovered by a boy in Tanzanian high school in 1963. Do you know his name? Let's give him credit.
Mr. Wizard.
Is there a reason I should know the boy who discovered this in 1963?
Yes. Well, you know, it's a famous story. His name is Mpemba. Mpemba. Okay, I forgot to, I really should have started. For your audience, I will ask him two questions. One is the only two liquid elements at room temperature.
Mercury and bromide.
Right.
Well, you didn't give him a chance. Okay, the only planet in our solar system that have its day longer than its year, by quite a bit, by the way.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Also rotate backward. It goes back. Want to give this to the audience. Maybe somebody will.
No matter how many times you ask this question, I can never remember the
I
answer.
Love this question. You know why?
Why?
Because it probably will happen to Earth. With all of that sort. Okay, just one last comment. Really, you know, let's have a prayer for this beautiful man that was murdered and his body cut in pieces by the savage government of Saudi Arabia. Prayer, everybody, pray for this man's soul. Young, beautiful man that was savage country. Thank you, guys. Beautiful
Thank you,
that party. Thank you. Bye-bye.
And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. We're here every Sunday at 7 p.m., and this is our 25th anniversary day today. So feel free to join us. Those two numbers are area code 415-841-4134 or toll-free 866-798-8255. Our panelists tonight, Kira Pace, technical editor, and Lori Fisher, dubiously retired teacher at Dabble Valley College. And I'm your moderator, Dana Rodriguez. And Sherry, you are up.
Hi, Stephen and Sherry from Berkeley. Hi, Ed. I was going to give you a shout-out, but you called first. My question's about the New Deal program. There are over 15,000 New Deal sites throughout the U.S. Two-part question. Number one, what are the five states with the most New Deal sites?
Iowa.
I could ask the second.
Oh, sorry.
I wasn't sure.
Don't get in Sherry's way.
What are the four locations that are not states or were not yet states that receive New Deal sites? So we've got five states that receive the most New Deal sites and then four locations that were not yet states or are still not states.
Well, the only two that weren't states yet were Hawaii and Alaska, so.
Okay, that's. Two of the four.
Thank you for giving me the easiest answers.
What about Puerto Rico, then?
Puerto Rico is number three.
Good, good, good. And
so is one of the five states Iowa or no?
No.
Okay.
So if I said something like the Tennessee Valley Authority, that would not count because that's, well, maybe it would count. So an individual thing, it's the number of them per state per that you're state. Looking for.
I mean, just who has the most. You don't have to name
right.
the number.
So is California one of them?
Number one.
Okay. And then how about New York?
Number two.
Wow.
Pennsylvania?
Number five.
Illinois? Nope.
How about Texas?
Number four. So there's one
so
more.
So this is mostly, it has to do with the, based on population probably, too, in
perhaps,
a sense.
Perhaps, yeah.
So far.
Yeah. And the last one's on the East Coast, number three.
Well, is it in New England?
Yes.
Massachusetts?
Yes, okay. Number three.
All right.
Good.
And so then the only one out is
the fourth location.
Which fourth location that was not yet a state or is still not a state.
So can we narrow that down? Is it that it is still not a state?
Still not a state.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. Dana got the...
The two that were yeah. not yet states. Is it somewhere... Let's see, New Deal. Could it be Guam? Or probably it's somewhere in the Caribbean then?
No.
No? Okay.
So...
I don't think this is a Caribbean. South Central America, maybe?
Hmm. Oh. What? Oh.
Panama?
Number...
Oh, oh that
of course.
Makes perfect
yeah.
sense.
Yeah.
Okay,
that
good.
Had one.
Good question.
Thanks.
Thank you, Jerry.
Awesome.
All right. Laura, you go ahead.
All right. So Paul Simon of Simon & Garfunkel, as a songwriter, did not have many collaborators. I was surprised they had a collaborator for American Tune, the one that starts Many of the Times I've Been Mistaken. Who was his collaborator on that song? And Simon wrote the lyrics, and the collaborator wrote the music.
This person is obviously well-known.
Very.
American?
No.
English?
No.
Not Jacques Brel, is it?
It's not,
I was going to guess Serge Gainsbourg.
Yeah, there you go.
Neither of those.
Okay. So, not American, not English.
Mm-hmm.
Is this person better known for other types of music, say opera or classical, something like that?
This person is better known for other types of music, something like that, yes.
Okay. Is this person Spanish or Italian?
Neither.
Okay.
I feel like I'm on What's My Line.
I know.
Huh.
I mean, he wasn't really collaborating with South African groups yet at that point, so it's not like...
You know what I'm going to say? The collaboration might be misleading. They never sat down together. Paul Simon took this person's music and adapted it.
Oh, I have heard this.
And one reason was the person was dead.
Okay.
Oh, what year was this?
American Tune is on 50, everybody, still crazy after all these years, so that's 70s, late 70s.
Oh.
But that wouldn't matter for the person who wrote the music. The person was long dead.
We didn't establish where this person was from.
No, yet. Russian composer.
No.
Okay.
Is it African?
No.
Oh, the studio audience is guessing Bach.
It is Bach. Mm.
Thank you, studio audience.
It was part of the melody of St. Matthew's Passion, believe it or not,
that
he adapted. And if you listen, you'll actually hear it.
Thank you, Andrew from Oakland.
Andrew from Oakland got it? Thank you. Very nice. Good job. All right. Good.
All right. Lawrence, you are up.
Hi, it's Lawrence and Eric from Glen Park. We thought it should be an Oscar question.
Thank you for that. Oscar
Homolka.
Yeah,
that is.
It's an easy one. I spend a lot of time in India. So three films produced or co-produced in India have won Oscars. What are they?
Oscars for Best Picture?
Any Oscar.
Oh, any Oscar.
Gandhi.
Gandhi is one.
Yeah. Okay. So when you... Any Oscar. So they could have been directed by somebody who was not Indian. Just as long as they were filmed in India.
As long as they were produced.
Produced in India.
How about Passage to India?
No.
No?
Wasn't produced.
What was the recent Bollywood one?
Oh, Slumdog Millionaire.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
There's a bell on that.
Just one more.
How old is the last one?
Well, it's an honorary Oscar.
Oh.
So the film is from 1955, but the Oscar was much later.
Oh, is it?
Was the film set in India or just filmed there?
It was set in India.
1955, set in India.
Is that? I'm sorry. I know I'm going to mispronounce it. Is Sajit Ray?
Oh,
it is.
One of the Apu trilogies.
The first.
Very good.
There you go.
Excellent. Whew. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good question.
All right. Let me give you a question here. So I came across this list. It's from the Washington Post, and they gave a list of six phobias, six of the most common phobias in the U.S. And they asked, they did a survey as to whether Democrats or Republicans were more frightened of these things.
And it was Democrats and Republicans.
So I'm just going to go around the table here, and or you can just guess. And I want you to tell me, is it Republicans or Democrats that are more afraid of these things? Number one, bugs and snakes.
I'm going to go with Democrats.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
You're right.
All right.
Okay. Number two.
I get a bell.
Well, I'll wait till the end. Number two, blood and needles.
That one's not as clear cut, yeah. I don't think. But I'm going to guess Democrat again.
That is correct.
Okay.
Number three, claustrophobia.
I got to go with Republicans
yeah,
on that.
Me
they don't
too.
Like to be closed in.
It's Democrats again.
No, these are all Democrats.
Number four, strangers.
Republicans.
That's Democrats.
Again. What?
Number five, ghosts.
I object to ghosts.
I feel that there's a trend here, but I'm going to buck convention go with Republicans for ghosts.
That's Democrats again. And number six, clowns.
Oh.
I refuse. I refuse to believe that you're going to do six Democrats in a row. So Republican for clowns, for
First
sure.
First of all, you can obviously see the Republicans have a high tolerance for clowns. So, no, it's Democrats. So, yes, it's all Democrats, believe it or not.
Wow.
That have more of this phobia. And next up we have...
Did they maybe poll for people at the Democratic National Convention?
That I don't know. Robert.
Hi, Robert and Judy from San Jose. In the movies, many bad guys and women wear hats. I'll name the evil hat and the year, and you tell me the iconic villain, the movie, and for extra credit, the actor.
The hats have a name, huh?
A crown, 1937.
Crown
hand. An animated crown.
Oh, okay, so that's Snow White
the evil
and
queen.
The Seven Dwarfs.
Right.
Voiced by...
Ooh. Who did the voice? Gail Sondergaard?
Lucille Laverne.
Lucille Laverne. I'm sorry. Yeah, she played the old... She didn't play the queen. She played... Well, she did kind of play the queen, but she played the... When the queen was a hag. She did that voice. So.
A bowler, 1964.
So this is... Odd Job.
Oh, nice.
Oh, Goldfinger.
Goldfinger, yeah.
Played by
I don't know his name. Harold Cicada.
Yes.
All right.
A Derby, 1971.
A Derby, 1971. And this is a villain.
Many Derbies, 1971.
Many Derbies.
Many Derbies. Give us a hint.
By based on a book, it's a color in the title of the film.
Oh, good job. David LaTulipe got it. Clockwork Orange. Did you get it, David, or did somebody feed that? Oh, you got it. Good for you.
Nice.
And the character, one of the main character who wore a derby.
Oh, it's
Malcolm McDowell. What was the character? I don't remember the character's name.
Cool. Alex DeLarge.
Yeah.
All right, good.
Malcolm McDowell was the actor, right?
A Nursing Cap, 1975.
Oh, one flew over the cuckoo's
nest.
Nurse
Ratched, yeah.
Louise Fletcher.
Louise Fletcher, right.
Perfect.
Good.
A Fedora, 1984.
1984. Are you wearing a fedora?
I am.
Okay.
It's hard to get it by the year.
It wasn't The Untouchables, was it?
It was a horror movie.
Oh, yeah. Freddy Krueger wears it in Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, good job on that.
As played by Robert Englund.
Good job.
A Campaign Hat, 1987.
Hmm. Is that a remake of The Manchurian Candidate?
No.
1987.
Hmm. A Drill Sergeant's Campaign Hat.
Oh, I thought you meant like a straw.
Oh,
loader.
Is that the Kubrick film? It's
Full Metal Jacket. You're thinking of Arlie Ermey.
Yeah,
and the character's name.
Don't remember the character's name.
Gunnery Sergeant Hartman.
Okay,
he wasn't an enemy.
He was a villain.
He was a villain.
Mm. Yeah, he was a villain. Yeah. He drove Vincent D'Onofrio around
crazy.
The band.
Yeah, that's it.
All right, thank you.
Good question.
Good job. Let's see. Let's go to the next one here. Conrad.
Hello. Conrad from Sunnyvale. My category is professions. What profession should know the meaning of the mnemonic, never saddle a dead horse? And what does it mean?
Kira, you may be... I'm not throwing it on you, but...
Is this bus that is suddenly over me?
You're a little better at that than I am.
NSDH.
N-S-A-D-H.
Does the A count?
The what?
N-S-A-D-H.
It's actually not... I'm not sure if it's technically a mnemonic because it's not initialized.
No.
But it's the words.
Oh, never.
The words, the phrase is never saddle a dead horse.
Oh, okay. So it's...
Maybe what...
It's not for initials. You're actually...
No.
That's advice in the
I'm
profession.
I'm not sure what that would be called. Yeah. I assumed it was
good
a
advice.
Mnemonic.
Professional, professional development.
Sort of memory thing.
I think,
wrong.
Yeah, I
You're
think
right.
any idea or, yeah.
Sure,
it can be a,
sure.
It can be, it, I think that is a...
I think we made some false assumptions there with the initials.
I don't know.
Taxidermy was what I go with first, but probably not true.
Is it maybe the number of the letters? Each word? No, okay. Sometimes that's how people remember, like, pie... Things like that.
It's a profession you're looking for.
Right.
And this is advice in that profession, like this.
Yeah, it's something kind of very advice. Important to remember within the profession. And it has nothing to do with horses.
If you told us a profession, would that give it away immediately?
No.
Then what's the profession?
Well, okay, the profession, you get a lot of it in the Bay Area with the bridges, and I guess the latest one is the transit center that was closed.
Oh, so this is construction then?
Yeah,
okay,
it's so a structural engineer.
Okay, does never saddle a dead horse mean?
It has to do with cabling. Cables, you never put the saddle on the dead end of the cable. The saddle is to protect the load part of the cable so it doesn't fail.
For those not watching at home, we have a visual here in the studio. Conrad,
I'm sorry we didn't do better with that. Thank you.
Just pick it up on the video cast tomorrow.
All right, let's take a call. Good. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Is that me?
It is you.
Hey, Charlie from San Francisco.
Hi, Charlie.
I wanted to answer the question about rigging. God, I had that.
Oh, good. I'm glad. No, it's good that you knew that. I appreciate it.
I almost had the rigging question, but I was going to take a wild stab at the Coliseum dress code.
Yes.
Which is, one shouldn't wear a jacket into the Coliseum.
Nope, not it.
God damn it. That was on the theory that they didn't want you stealing pieces of it, hiding it under your parka.
I will tell you that it is a piece of clothing worn primarily by women.
Yeah.
Ah, way off. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Can I take a guess at that, then?
Yes, since
is it miniskirt?
It is not miniskirt.
Okay.
Miniskirt, they would welcome that at the Coliseum, I'm sure. Not high heels. Sorry, David. And let's see. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter. Are you there? No? Next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi. Did you get anyone to get the film comment?
No, not yet.
Casablanca.
It is not Casablanca, though that's a perfectly reasonable guess. You mean okay. It's like Grand Opera, only the people are thinner? Is that what you're
yeah.
talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
Not Casablanca. It is around that time, though.
Okay.
Is it The Grapes of Wrath?
It's not The Grapes of Wrath, because right. the people were thin there
yes.
already.
Wow.
Thank Sorry. You very much.
Sorry.
And let's see, Tom. Or Jeff. I'm sorry. Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff from Oakland. St. Mark is the patron saint of Venice, Italy. So Venice and St. Mark have something in common with a place that's very dear to the listeners of Minds Over Matter. What is that?
Venice and St. Mark have something common.
Love of pigeons. Would that be it?
That's a good guess, but
yeah,
no.
Not it, okay. We're filling the air.
Does it have anything to do with the bell?
Ooh. With your bell? No. I don't.
A
no,
bell
I
in mean. General?
No. No.
I'm sorry, can you give the phrasing of that question one more time?
Okay.
I feel like there's a clue there.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, Venice and St. Mark have something in common with a place that is very dear to the listeners of Minds Over Matter.
It's dear is the
is
word
that, the
that we need
word?
To focus on, I think.
But it has nothing to do with the bell, so you can't say anything with the campanile here.
Dear listener, brand names maybe that are dear? No.
Something about our location, our address.
Hint.
It's probably a place that is, I would guess it's the most common answer for a place.
Egypt? Is it Egypt? Is that, here's the Egypt question.
Yes, the remains of St. Mark were originally located in Alexandria, Egypt,
good job.
Before they were stolen by the Egyptians. I'm sorry, by the Venetians.
Thank you, Jeff.
Ed, that was for you.
That's great.
Dan.
Oh, right here. Okay, Dan and his wife, Jerry, from Juneau, Alaska.
It's our Alaska fan club.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we try to increase the fan membership all the time.
you got a fight on your hands, I assume, but okay.
There's an area of approximately 13,000 square miles in three contiguous states with limits and even complete bans on the use of cell phones, microwave ovens, digital cameras, radio broadcasts, CB radios, anything that produces any sort of electromagnetic energy, depending on where you are in this zone, is banned. And they actually patrol with vehicles and, you know, antennas and stuff and track people down who break the...
So when you say three contiguous states, so is it where those states meet?
The total size is in parts of those three states. It covers three states.
Right, okay.
Some a little bit, some bigger.
So you want the three states.
Right? Okay, what do I want?
Is Nevada one of them?
What is the name of this area?
Oh.
Why does it exist? And what are the states?
Is Nevada one?
Negative.
Is Idaho one?
Negative.
All right.
Does it exist because they are trying to do scientific testing on the effect of it not existing?
No, but it is a scientific.
That's very
it is,
I
and
understood.
I'll let you know it's been in business since 1958.
So it's like
is this a government agency? That's
it's a government
is this area
operation.
Area 51? Is it related
no.
to that at all?
No, it's not related to that.
So is there a nuclear facility involved with this?
No.
Well, National Labs is Idaho, so that's already out.
It's very sparsely populated. There are several little towns there, so you can live there. And another curiosity is that people who believe they suffer from electromagnetic sensitivity, things like that, like this room here or whatever, they like to move there and live in a little cabin, maybe wrap it in wire. And
these three states are west of the Mississippi, aren't they?
Negative. No.
Huh?
Whoa.
Okay, now I'm confused. Let's see.
I feel like they're probably on or near the Mississippi, right? States that are on or near it? No?
No.
Okay. I was thinking like Arkansas would be a good candidate.
No. I better hide the answer here.
I can't read upside down anyway.
Well, I mean, if it's three states then, and it's not along the Mississippi, then it's probably up in New England where the states are tiny.
Uh-uh.
No? Mm-hmm. Okay, well, where have we left? We have the American
South. Well, you know, there's a lot of rural back there, you know.
Yeah.
Does it have anything to do with other government facilities that are there, like Fort Knox or something like that? So is Kentucky one?
No.
No?
No. What about Pennsylvania?
No.
New York?
No.
We're doing poorly.
I know.
Once you find out, you're going to look it up because it's pretty interesting.
Maybe, should you tell us?
Oh, I'm going to, one more guess with a Carolina.
No, but since you don't know the answer, I have a second question for my friend who couldn't be here.
You put that very brutally, but okay. So wait a minute. Well, then give it before you ask the second question. Give us the answer to the first one.
I'm going to tell you what it is.
Yeah.
It's called the NRQZ, National Radio Quiet Zone. The National Radio Quiet Zone was created in 1958. To protect radio telescope research, of which they have some of the first and biggest radio telescopes for searching outer space. And coincidentally, the U.S. Spy Intelligence Gathering System is a Navy facility there also. It comprises parts of Virginia, West Virginia, and Maryland.
Wow.
West Virginia, yeah, I guess I can see that a little bit.
Just a little tip of Maryland, but and so they have problems because the radio stations are very confined. There's a big ski area next to it,
right?
And they couldn't use their cell phones and stuff like that, you know, or their radios to call the ski patrol and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, it's a very interesting subject. You can look it up.
Yeah. Good.
Thank you very much.
Great question.
I better limit you to one. Not that I don't want you to ask the other question. But
this one's fast and easy. And this is Jackie Pels, who couldn't be here tonight from Pleasant Hill.
All right.
Two rhyming states have towns named for Abraham Lincoln's Secretary of State. What are the states?
Seward, Alaska.
And who is the name?
Nebraska namesake? Would be the other.
Alaska, Nebraska.
Nebraska. That took me forever to get. Thank you very much, and happy to be here.
Thank you. Yeah. Bye-bye. Let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's Tom in wherever I am.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
Everybody, first of all. And let's see, was the movie quote from Cecilia Agar, is that about Double Indemnity?
It's not, but you're right around the, you're certainly around the right time.
I'm around the right film genre?
Yep. Yes.
Yep?
Yeah.
Oh, Big Sleep?
Nope.
No. All right, forget it. I'm done. I'll give up easily. The major clothing garment, I was going to say cummerbund, but probably not, because you said women.
It is women.
So probably the burqa.
It is 99% women.
Let's is it the burqa?
It is not.
Interesting. Okay. I don't think I have any other... I don't think there are any other questions out there. The Ely, Nevada, is the birthplace of what First Lady?
I don't know.
It's a 20th century First Lady, correct?
It is. 21st century, 20th and after, later.
Oh.
Well, possibly later. Probably not.
No, it's...
That would make it Clinton, the way you just...
No.
No? Okay.
No. Oh, it...
Well, depending on whether you count 2000 as 20th or 21st, that would be Laura Bush.
Yeah, it's not Laura. Is it Laura Bush?
No, that was just a misdirect. It was 20th century.
Thank you.
Unacceptable.
Thank you for wasting that 30 seconds.
Sorry.
No.
Maybe Eisenhower.
No, a little later. Pat Nixon.
Oh, Pat Nixon. All right.
Sweet.
And so one other question. What was the, for the California Historical Register, you know, the landmarks, the nice plaques that are all over the state, what is, where is plaque number one? And the most recent plaque is 1055. I wonder if you know where that is. Either number one or 1055.
Is one maybe Mission Dolores?
No.
Okay.
Hmm.
And I suppose it's not, I didn't really know of the place necessarily, so I suppose the city or town would be more appropriate. Easier to guess.
So is one is right at the ocean then? Or am I?
It's in a town on the ocean, let's put it that way.
Is it San Luis Obispo?
No.
No, I'm sorry.
No, it's in Monterey. It's the Custom House.
Oh.
In Monterey. And then 1055, which you, I'm sure you've all heard or at least seen on bumper stickers.
The mystery spot.
Very good.
Yeah. Is it really?
Is it really?
Good. Yep.
Really?
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Aren't there many mystery spots? Just the Santa Cruz one? Is the movie Postman Always Rings Twice?
It is not.
Okay.
Is it 12 Angry Men?
It is not. Okay. And Mark, it's your turn.
Hey, it's Mark from Petrero Hill. This was my brother-in-law sort of gave me the idea for this, so we'll get away from electrons and things like that. Also, I'm going to say what everyone's going to always says at home about Monterey. I knew that.
I didn't. So.
Okay, so there have been two plays and two books that have won Pulitzer Prizes and Academy Awards. Now, there have been 12 that have been nominated, but only four, two plays, two books, have actually won.
But there's no relation. In other words, there wasn't a play version of the book that later won the Academy Award.
No, so it was a book that became a movie, won an Academy Award, and it was a play, became a movie, that won they all won Pulitzer Prizes.
They won Best Picture and Best Play?
Yes,
okay.
Correct.
So it's the two books, the Pulitzer Prize books, Gone with the Wind,
All the King's Men.
Correct. What are the two plays?
One of the plays is You Can't Take It With You.
You Can't Take It With You.
Correct. And what's the other play?
Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Nope.
Okay.
So these all won Best Picture?
Correct.
How many were there again?
So there's two books, two plays. So you just need the one play.
And it won the best Oscar for Best Picture.
Correct.
Okay.
Can you give us the decade?
It was in the 80s.
Oh, Driving Miss Daisy.
Correct.
Good job on that.
Good question.
Oh, is that it? Oh, I thought there was one more for some reason.
No, that's
okay.
The other guy.
Thank you very much. Next. Who am I missing here?
I don't know. Who's next on the list?
David? Keith. Keith or David?
Keith or David.
Dave. Sorry.
Hello.
There you go. I'm sorry.
David from Oakland.
All right.
It's a little obscure, but I couldn't resist.
As opposed to the non-obscure questions we've got so far.
In 1949, Alan Ludden was the host of one of the first radio quiz shows. What was the name of the show?
Radio quiz show.
Radio.
Not TV.
Not TV.
Did it make
it?
It
did
TV?
Later on become, of course. A big
so it wasn't break. Password, huh?
No, it was before that. And he also did, after this, he did College Bowl on the radio.
I remember him doing College
Bowl. But this
Bowl
is on the radio. A little bit before that. But
is it a show that later became a TV show?
No, it never quite. I'll give you a hint. It's a show about where they ask teenagers about etiquette. Of all things.
What a big hit.
I know.
Mind your manners.
That's it.
Oh, good job.
I just couldn't resist the title.
Never even heard of it.
Thank you,
thank you. Thank you for having us all here tonight.
Thank you. Let's see. Keith?
Oops. Make room. We should see if they're on YouTube or how somewhere. Teenage show about minding your manners.
Sounds mind excellent. Your manners.
Yeah. I like the name. Mm.
Is the article of clothing a bikini?
It is not a bikini.
Is it a bathing suit of some sort?
It is not a bathing suit of any sort. Hi, Keith.
Hi, this is Keith and Dow from Japantown.
All right.
So there are, I think, 13 U.S. territories. Five of them are inhabited. The other eight have no permanent populations anyway. What are the names of the 13 U.S. territories?
That are inhabited.
Inhabited and uninhabited.
Inhabited and uninhabited.
Well, Puerto Rico and Guam would be, we've mentioned those, they on the list.
Would a Commonwealth be considered? I guess Commonwealth is considered.
The U.S. Virgin Islands is one.
Right. Let's see. You said Guam, the Virgin Islands, the where America's Day begins. Which one is that? What is this, Marky?
American Samoa.
American Samoa. Okay.
Oh, that's you. Four of the inhabited ones.
Yeah. All right.
Marshall. Somebody said the Marshall Republic. Islands.
Are there? Do we have some of the Marianas? The
right.
Right.
That in fact, that's one of the Northern Marianas is one of the one territory. Yeah.
Okay,
so we have all the inhabited ones.
Right.
So
right.
We have none of the uninhabited.
Well, no wonder. None of the
audience. Help out.
Are the uninhabited considered nature preserves of some kind?
Well, at least one of them is. Yes. The others tend to be more military. Well, some of them anyway. Midway, yes.
Oh, good.
Are you thinking like Kwajalein?
Howland Island,
Kwajalein?
No.
I mean, they're kind of inhabited by military, I guess, so.
Clipperton Island, I think. Although I think that may be British.
Yeah, I think it's British.
Well, what about Bikini Atoll? Because I know that there is a military installation there, but...
It's not on the list.
No,
though.
Okay.
There's some territory they use as target practice in the area in the Caribbean or off Florida. But no. No. Okay.
Baker?
It's Baker. Baker's one.
That's
yeah.
Sparky got
oh,
that
good.
One. Thank
okay,
you.
Good.
Baker and Howland you had and Midway. And the others are Wake Island, Palmyra, Kingman Reach, Reef. Johnson Atoll and Jarvis Island.
Nice.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Very good.
Yeah. All right. Next, let's see. Is it Bill?
Yeah.
All right. If you felt we passed by you for some reason, let us know.
Jump in this chair.
Yeah. All right. I'm serious. Okay, go ahead, Bill.
This is Bill from Daly City. How many famous composers can you name who composed something in the first 30 years of the 19th century? So they were contemporary, from 1800 to 1830.
So 1800
to 1830.
Oh, well, are you talking about classical music?
Yes.
Oh,
so Beethoven?
Yes.
Weber?
Right.
Schubert?
Yeah.
Haydn?
Yes.
After 1800, yeah.
Haydn is?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
Right. Is Mendelssohn too early?
Not Mendelssohn.
Mendelssohn.
Oh, yeah. was it Mendelssohn?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Schumann?
No.
Well, he was very young.
Schubert.
Schubert. We have Schubert.
You got them.
Okay.
Hummel?
Good.
Hummel, yeah.
How many more are there?
I have about six more.
John Ireland? Not John Ireland. John Field?
Yeah, John Field.
Okay.
Since we're short on time, I'll just.
All right, go ahead.
Then there's Chopin.
Oh.
Rossini, Liszt, Paganini, Berlioz, and Czerny.
Nice. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Good buddies.
Hi, I'm Jude from West Oakland. I have a question. It's regarding music, San Francisco. Who is the San Francisco avant-garde band that recorded such, in quotations, hit albums as Eskimo, Buster and Glenn, and Third Reich and Roll, And what is their signature stageware? That should be a hint.
It's the residence.
You got it.
And they wear giant eyeballs over their heads.
Thank you so much.
I'm so
glad.
Not that long ago, appeared in public without their giant eyeball. At
great.
ACT.
Thank you. I'm so glad you know it.
It's a great question. I do.
Thank you.
Patience.
Okay. I have a quote. I'd like to know who wrote this. Who did he write it about? It regards what work of art, and where is that work of art now? And here is the quote. I have never expected to hear a coxcomb ask 200 guineas for flinging a pot of paint in the public's face.
So is this spoken about a painter?
Yes.
Is it Jackson Pollock that it's spoken about?
No.
Right era?
No.
Is the painter... What century is the painter best known?
19th.
Okay.
The quarter is
19th.
Oh,
is the quote going to be something about Monet, then, and the Impressionists?
No.
Okay.
Is this Whistler's mother? The painter painting by Whistler? I mean, arrangement in black and gray?
That's not the painting.
Is James Whistler the painter?
Whistler is the painter.
And that's from our studio audience.
Good job.
So it's a different painting. So he painted more than one thing, huh?
So who said the quote? Who wrote it?
Is it George Bernard Shaw?
No.
Is it Oscar Wilde?
No.
Is it somebody who is better known, a well-known?
Yes.
But not necessarily an art critic, right?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So who are the art critics of that time period? John Ruskin.
Bingo.
Oh, good job.
Okay, so John Ruskin said it of Whistler. What was the painting, and where is that painting now?
Is it The Bathers?
No. I think that would be Cézanne.
I don't know other...
Sorry.
Okay. Whistler did not do Bathers.
No, we don't know.
Arrangement in Black and Gold.
Black and Gold.
The subtitle is The Falling Rocket, so it's fireworks going on at night over Cremorne Gardens. And it was the subject of a lawsuit between Ruskin and Whistler.
Oh, wow.
A famous lawsuit about legitimacy of art, and it now hangs in the Detroit Institute of Arts.
Thank you very much.
Who won the lawsuit, you know?
Whistler won the lawsuit, and he won a farthing in damages, so it financially broke him.
Wow.
But it certainly made the history books.
Yeah, great story.
Harris, we're going to get you in.
Hello, Harris from Emeryville.
Hi.
I have a two-part president question.
All right, very quickly.
What U.S. president was sworn in by a local notary public, number one, and what U.S. president refused to swear to the oath, and how did he get in?
The notary public is... Was the notary public the president's father?
Yes.
So it's Calvin Coolidge.
Calvin Coolidge. Yeah.
Right. And it was done in Vermont after Harding's death.
Harding died in San Francisco.
Right. And the second part was...
What U.S. president refused to swear to the oath of office, and how did he get in?
Is this a person who refused to swear on the Bible?
Yes.
Who was it? It's not Lincoln, is it?
No.
Could it have been Nixon? Is it?
No. Okay. It's. I saw this recently. It's a 19th century president.
20th century.
Oh, 20th century.
Well, I'm not sure. I think it's 19th century. 19th century.
No.
It's Franklin Pierce.
Yeah. Oh, that's 19th century.
He was such a zealot to God, he didn't think the presidency was worthy of the oath.
Oh, wow.
Thank you very much.
And they let him in anyway.
We are almost out of time, unfortunately. And if we didn't get to you, we didn't get your call. If we didn't get to your question, I apologize very much. But we want to say thank you for coming to our 25th anniversary. We're very grateful for your listenership. We're very grateful for you being here. It means a lot to us. It means a lot to the station. And we appreciate all the attention you've given us over the years. And we hope you'll keep listening as well and maybe come to the 30th. And we say welcome and thank you and have a wonderful evening from myself, Dana Rodriguez, Kira Pace, Lori Fisher. Thank you, thank you, thank you. and good night.
If you ain't sure, you might. It's gotta be this or that. If it ain't dry.